Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good. All 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
Guys, Happy New Year. It's a Full Blast podcast. And you know who's with me? If it's the new year, it's Jesse Uetta. You know, I Jessup's here. But before we get to it, let's take care of a little business. What do you say? Number one is thanks to my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, bakers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a grinder for knife makers, DIYers. If you're removing material, this is if you're a welder, fabricator, this is for you. Go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, and you're going to get 10% off everything. I mean, what else is there to say? Those guys are awesome. I'm really excited about what they're going to be doing soon, and we're going to be talking hopefully more about their power hammer soon, and we'll see. But happy new year to them. I had a nice Happy New Year's message from Vince, and I appreciate it, so we'll talk soon. I want to thank my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. Go to evenheat-chill.com to check out what you, if you need to get it hard, use a Even Heat, that's it, and period. You use knives, hammers, tools. If you need to get it hardened, this is it. If ceramics, it's for you. Get the tap control, solid state drive. Don't fool around. I mean, don't stop fooling around is really what it comes down to. Fool around is not for you, okay? I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Lawrence Lake is the man, and he is going to square you away with all your knife-making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forge press, heat treating ovens, anvils, and anything you want to get started resupplied. I just got the message that the whole Canadian shipping situation is all taken care of. So now he didn't have a problem. Now all the problems are all done. The shipping's okay. Everything's fine. But he made it happen. Lawrence made it happen. So I cannot thank my friend Lawrence Lake enough. He Jacob Stout, one of our Knife Talk listeners, is the recipient, the winner of the Maritime Knife Supply Scholarship for the New England School of Metalwork. So congratulations to Jacob, and congratulations to Lawrence Lake for another year of doing this great scholarship to get people to go to the New England School of Metalwork. Highly suggest checking them out at maritimeknifesupply.com. Stay involved with him, and it's definitely worth it. And if there's something that you think that he should have, you should let him know. I want to thank my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vice. Their vices are built in the heart of Texas, and they're designed to take your handle finishing to a whole new level. You ain't gonna get much better than it. Our knives are on it twice. Once for hand sanding, they hold the blade comfortably, even if it's a distal taper, even if it's a integral bolster, and then you can turn it around and use it for your handle finishing. So definitely check out TrojanHorseForge.com and put in the promo code FULLBLAST10 for 10% off everything, including their T4 scent oil, which I think is awesome, and their handle press attachment. So it's a great company. They build things in batches. It's a small American business doing great things, and they're for you. Speaking about another great company, I had such a good time last December. I had my guy Coy Baker from Baker Forge on, and Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. Baker Forge is great. They make really awesome stuff, and the steel is really great, and it has all sorts of exotic stuff, and there's the tiger mine, the bronze mine, copper mine. I know they're working on stainless Damascus, which is very exciting, or stainless clad pattern welded steel. They all already have AEBL core, which is really, really great stuff, and I love everything they're doing. And you want to talk about a company that's doing great things, Baker Forge is unbelievable. And if you go to BakerForge.com and put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you're going to get 10% off all your orders. So get yourself some of that. Get yourself some of that Tiger Mai, Bronze Mai, all that stuff. And then when you finish it, oh, by the way, to finish it, you go to the website. They hold your hand. And then you can use the shittiest bandsaw you got, and they'll take care of you. The heat treating is easy. The finishing's easy, and when you start to etch it, you got to use that gator piss, ladies and germs. Got to use that gator piss. That's right, G-A-T-O-R-P-I-S-S. Gator short for alligator, piss is short for urine. Stuff is the best etching on the planet. Ain't nothing better than this. I use it all the time, and I'd highly suggest you use it. And another place you can use it is at get it as Texas Farrier Supply. My friends at Texas Farrier Supply are offering 10% off all their orders. If you want to get their Endos USA, you want to get anything they have. They're a great company that's that serves the blacksmithing, bladesmithing, farrier community in Texas. And if you use the promo code KnifeTalk10, you get 10% off everything at Texas Farrier Supply, including gator piss. So many thanks to my friends at Texas Farrier Supply, and many thanks to my friends at Baker Forge. Ain't gonna be better than that. My boys are doing a great job over there, and I'm really, really excited about doing more stuff with them in the new year. Now we're in 2025. I want to thank my friends at Total Boats, totalboats.com/fullblast for all your adhesives, paints, primers, polishing compounds, all that stuff. Get yourself some of that Fathom Thick Set and make some handle hybrid handle material. Stuff is terrific. I just made some hybrid handle material with the Fathom Thick Set, and you don't need any special vessels or vacuum chambers or any of that shit. You get yourself some of that. She ain't listening. Kristen ain't listening to this, but she's the best. You can get yourself a mold, and you get yourself some of that Fathom Thick Set, and pour it in, and it'll make you this great material. And I love their two-part epoxy. I use their two-part epoxy exclusively. I've been using it for about 2 years now, and all my handles are all glued up, epoxied up with the hybrid handle material. And they also have the dyes to make if you want to dye your epoxy or your Fathom Thick Set, they make the dyes that's exclusively for it. So it makes sure that you don't worry that you put some of the bad gunk in your epoxy. Don't put no bad gunk in your epoxy. So go to the link in the bio of Go to the link in the show notes where you're listening to this. Basically, it's totalboats.com/fullblast, and that is the affiliate link that gives me street cred, because that's all I'm looking for these days, ladies and gentlemen. 2025, I need more street cred. I want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. That's g.l._Hansen & Sons. Go to gcarta.bigcartel.com. And I had a really great conversation with Greg Hansen. He's the maker. He and Mikey are the makers of G Carta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy with pressure. I love it. I love it. I love it. He sent me a patch of these great rainbows and these like unicorny kind of things. And he also has the pheasant and the hoopla and the tuxini and all these great colors. And if you really want to put some razzle dazzle in your handle scales, get yourself some of that G Carta. I love what he's doing. I had a really great conversation with him, and I hope to speak with him soon. Go to gcarta.bigcartel.com and put some lead in your pencil, you know what I'm saying? And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Tormek. They're celebrating, got to be 52 years of being in business. Their black TA sharpening system is awesome. Their water-cooled sharpening systems are the best. If you're a knife maker or if you're a woodworker trying to keep your chisel sharp, you want to keep your chisel sharp, get yourself a Tormek. Stop playing around. I love it. All my knives are all sharpened on the Tormek, and it has made me a better knife maker. So we got more stuff coming up with Tormek. Go to Tormek.com to see what the fuss is about. Go to @Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. If you have any questions, you should just send it my way. Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. I'll be happy to answer you any or push in the right direction. But I'm a huge fan of Tormek, and Tormek is... I got secret news. They're coming back with Knife Talk, so we're gonna get all squared away with my boys over in Sweden over at Tormek. And I want to, without any further ado, I want to thank my sponsors. My sponsors have been with me for a long time and allowed me to take a little bit of a vacation between Christmas and New Year's, and which was great. I got to relax. I got to be with my family. Did do some work, but it allowed me to kind of refocus on 2025. And one of the great parts about being on 2025 on the Full Blast Podcast is I always start the year with my friend, Jesse Oweta. Jesse Oweta is iJessup on Instagram, and she is terrific. She's terrific. And I'm glad she's here, as always. It's always great to start the year with a vibrant voice like my friend Jessie. Jessie, Happy New Year. How are you?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
You know what's funny? I'm usually, this might sound surprising, but I'm usually optimistic. Like, I try to be optimistic.
That is incredibly surprising.
Well, you know what? When it comes down to it, you know, it's all up to you. And I feel very strongly about being very positive and stuff like that. But and all the kind of negative stuff, I'm usually kind of, it's a fooling around, you know, fooling around stuff. It's like kind of Seinfeld-y Jewish history bullshit, you know, nonsense. You know,
lots of hand waving.
It's a lot of hand wringing and nonsense. It's bullshit, really. But frankly, I'm a little bit bummed out at my beloved state of New York. I'm kind of bummed out about it. Yeah. So, without getting too far into it, they started congestion pricing tolls in New York City.
Whoa.
And yeah, so if you drive into New York and if you go south of 60th Street, you get anywhere in New York. Anywhere in Manhattan, south of 60th Street, you're going to get jacked with a $12 charge unless you have an easy pass. Unless you have an easy pass, then you just charge you $9.
And it's $9?
Yeah.
That's so much. And I have an easy pass.
It sucks. And it's really like, it's so demoralizing. And then they raise all the toll prices on January 1st. And it's just like, there's a real malaise and just depression and anger with a lot of New Yorkers, because it's such a, it's so gross. So yeah. I am a little bit.
They're not generally
out.
Known for their like easygoing, affable nature.
You know, you'd be surprised.
Not that that's a bad thing.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. New Yorkers are awesome. I ever tell you this that when I put out something on Knife Talk, basically saying, because we get so many people from Forge and Fire. Sending
right.
messages.
Right, right.
So I was just like, what do you do if you've come from, like, you know, Mississippi and you come to New York for your first time and then you lose in the first day? Will you just sit in the hotel and just do nothing? So I put out this thing years ago saying, you send me a DM, I'm going to send you a DM. You don't have to say anything. All you have to say is, I happen to be in New York. Do you have any suggestions of where I go? No questions asked. Don't tell me what you're doing. I don't want you to get in trouble. And I made a itinerary for people, even including like train schedules from, I think they're filming in Connecticut.
Oh my gosh, aren't you adorable? Also, I want that. Not that I go to New York that often, but I absolutely want to know what that says.
I'll send it to you. So it turned out I ended up sending it to probably 16 contestants over the past few years.
Nice.
It was this underground, like, you're here, I get you squared away. And it was an inexpensive way to go around New York. Go on the High Line, walk here, gave a couple food suggestions. And I would get these awesome DMs of pictures from people doing the New York City itinerary. And the one thing I said was, don't be afraid to ask New Yorkers for, like, directions. New Yorkers are, like, really known for being hospitable. And real New Yorkers are really hospitable. And I got a lot of people saying, you know, I'd always heard that New Yorkers were, like, real pieces of shit. But I had such a really great time, so... Mm-hmm. We're not that bad.
I mean, like, I've never had a bad time in New York. The cat has joined me. I don't know if you
can
hear him.
No, that's great. Perfect.
I've never had a bad time in New York. And in fact, one thing that I figured out is that the faster I walk while I'm in New York, because I'm a pretty fast walker, the faster I walk in New York, the more people ask me questions. Like, where's the DMV? I kind of like that part of it.
That is like the unsung truth about being from New York, is when you're in the street, you're moving.
Yes.
And that you were obviously, that's a very unsung testament to you probably being a New Yorker at heart.
Well, I took it as such a compliment too.
Oh,
I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know where anything is. I just walk fast.
I took my daughter every year around this time. I'll take a day and we'll go in the city. We'll go to Chinatown, root around, and we were walking uptown to get some stuff for my wife for her birthday. And these tourists stopped in the middle of Broadway on a sidewalk, in the middle of the sidewalk. And I don't know what came over me. And I was like, And I definitely said, these people are not from New York. I said, you people aren't from, you got to keep them moving. You got to keep them moving. You can't be stopping in the middle of the sidewalk. That's outrageous. But it's like, there's this level of fury that comes over you when somebody's like, when you're walking down the street and somebody's like in your way.
It's so true. It's,
oh, dude. So like, if you're just like zipping through, you are like, you are the a perfect visitor to New York. You get a lot of credit. I'm sure you get a lot of credit from that, for that.
I mean, I feel like I do. And like, and I get it too, because I mean, it's kind of stupid to say this out loud, like New York is a popular place for tourists. Like, duh, yeah. It is. But there's that really annoying thing about tourism where it's like, yes, it's a good thing, can be, but it also means you're dealing with people who are brand new all the time. And
right.
Like, I see that in Joshua Tree a lot, because people forget that it's like an actual, like, it's like there are two cities with Joshua Tree in the middle, and people forget that it's not just like an amusement park, or like the whole place isn't just a park for you to stop, again, in the middle of the road, but like in their car. They'll just like stop driving and get out of their car to take a random photo of just like a Joshua Tree on someone's property. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, this is why people hate you. This is why there's a lot of bumper stickers that say, go back to LA. But oh, it's nice. Like, and like, I used to be like, okay, that's kind of mean. But now that I've been there for what feels like 100 years, I'm like, well, I get it, because it's treating it like it's your amusement place and not a place where people live. And so like, that's part of the problem. And I can't imagine that, you know, if you're just trying to move around the city of New York on your, you know, your daily walk to work or wherever it is that you go, and just always having to navigate masses of people who are prone to stopping in the middle of the sidewalk, the street, anywhere, and just, you know, lots of photo taking and stuff like that. Or heaven forbid, I once had to go to a place that was near Times Square and that was a nightmare. Yeah.
I just actually, funny enough, I have some, a couple of funny of those types of stories. I was watching the CNN coverage of the New Year's ball drop with Andy Cohen and what's his name? He's got gray hair and everyone's screaming at me.
What's his name? He has gray
Chester,
hair.
Chester.
He's got a face.
No, he's you know, he's
how
Spencer.
Many ears?
No, he's the main guy. He's the young. You got gray hair and he's a young looking guy. It's fucking Al Cooper. Something Cooper.
Anderson Cooper. Oh my gosh.
It. Listen, we fucking did,
call,
it.
Did you call him Chester?
Chester, Spencer.
Like,
Anderson
who
Cooper.
Are you talking about?
I was close. I was close. I actually was, hilariously enough, while I was trying to do that, all I could think of is, I'm the guy stopping in the middle of,
you're
in the,
totally,
middle of the sidewalk,
oh my gosh,
trying to, and they were like, come on, spit it out, Anderson Cooper. And number one, it was hilarious. Like, they were really funny. They were doing shots and it was really funny. But the crazy part is the what people have to do to go to see the ball drop in New York City is fucking madness. So basically, if you want to be in Times Square, they open it up in the morning, the corrals. And you cannot leave the corral. So you get there at like 6 o'clock in the morning and then you run to get your space. There's no bathrooms. There's no getting, if you get out, you can't get back in. So apparently all these people are wearing diapers. Like, it's very like,
you've
common knowledge.
You've got to be kidding me.
No. This is common knowledge.
I hate this. So this is like a nightmare I had.
It is like a nightmare. It sounds like something out of some sort of, like a Hunger Games thing or some kind of crazy movie. Like, everyone's all there and you're standing in the sea of people, and then the people who are in the know, and I'm putting my fucking quote fingers up, in the know, they say, oh yeah, we could do this every year and we wear diapers.
Jesus.
So you're sitting there and you're like, you're there all day. There's no sitting down. There's no getting something to eat. And you're sitting there just soiling yourself, waiting for this ball to drop. It's freezing, and it happened to be raining that night. And I've been to Times Square once. I didn't. A friend of mine had a, uh, a friend of mine worked at this newspaper that was in Times Square, and they opened up the office so we could watch it from the office, which was amazing because you're high up, and then you don't have to we brought food and you get booze and there's a bathroom,
you don't have to wear diapers.
but it was crazy because it's just like the people who do that are not New Yorkers. None of them. No self-respecting New Yorker would be like, all right, time to suit up, put my diaper on. Time to go out for the day.
I cannot believe, though, that anyone would want to do that. Well, I mean, like, I will say that I am a person who does not ever want to be in a space where there are more than three people that I don't know, like, at any given time. But, like, all of that just sounds like such a nightmare. And for what? Really?
17 hours. For what? For 17 hours.
Like, what do you get for it?
You get the...
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Experience of sitting next to other people who are peeing in their pants.
Watching balls drop. And it's like, what a way to ring in the new year.
Right. I mean, it's like the peeing in your pants would be the most optimal. That's like, what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
You're hoping only for peeing in your pants.
But like, I can do that at home.
Yeah.
I don't have to be
course.
In public to piss my own pants. Like,
I mean,
come on.
You don't have to. But I mean, so apparently when they're like at the end of the night, all the garbage men are cleaning up, and they clean up Times Square in like record fashion. They get dumpsters and they get shovels and they have like snow plows. And there's an exorbitant amount of used diapers left on the area because people are like, what am I going to go home with it? So you figure out a way to get it off, like a bra, I guess.
That is such a mental image that I did not need to have.
I mean, I don't know how they do it, but all of a sudden you see these pictures and they're just like, there's piles of diapers. So I don't know how they're removing these fucking diapers, but they're like leaving them for these sanitation workers to clean up. There's mountains of diapers. The whole thing is so bizarre. And then and then you can watch and it's freezing and it's raining and everyone's relatively miserable and getting drunk. And I'm sure if you're drinking if you're getting there at 8 o'clock in the morning and then you're going to stay there till midnight, you're going to pee peeing. I mean, if it was me, I mean, I would be like, I go to the bathroom so many times that I would be like, I mean, I would, it, I don't even, I, the thought of it would be mortifying. And then you're going home and you have to take a shower because not only are you filthy, you're covered in your own filth.
And you've been surrounded by people who are covered in their filth. Which
That's
is like,
right.
Even if it hasn't touched you, you know you have to shower that off.
Oh, dude. The funny part about New York is like the subway system, it smells.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's like you kind of know where you are. You kind of like, you're in there and you're not like, oh my, you never say, oh my God, what is that? You're just like, all right, this is the standard odor in this situation. But if you're standing in the middle of Times Square waiting for the ball to drop and you're just like, wait a second.
It should not smell anything other than air, a little bit of car exhaust,
right.
Maybe some fried food.
Yeah. A hot dog, maybe like a pretzel guy.
Yeah.
You're not expecting, this is not the 7 train. You're not expecting this. Just, wait, why does it smell like I'm in the subway?
Well, the subway also, like, okay, so I think it would actually be worse if just like certain subway lines like smelled like human sadness.
Yeah.
But since the entire subway system has a smell that is, not pleasant, but we all know it. It's just kind of, it's what you said. It's like, this is what the subway smells
right,
like.
Right, you know it.
Yeah, and like, I don't know if you've ever been to Portland, Oregon, but like there are just streets there that just reek of sadness.
Oh, I
and,
bet.
And it's just like walking around a corner and then it just punches you right in the face. And there was a particular event that happened on a bridge that I witnessed with my friend who has never forgiven me for taking him to Portland so he could witness what happened on this bridge. I'm not going to say it.
Imagine what happens
the worst,
on a bridge.
The worst thing you could see on a bridge and what would make you very upset.
Yes.
It was horrific. But like, You know, that's kind of what New York subway is supposed to smell like. You kind of expect it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm a connoisseur of subways,
and
I feel as though I made a connection with like European subways to the point where I felt like if you blindfolded me, I could tell you the difference. If you'd have to teleport me, but I could tell the difference between the Paris subway, the New York City subway, and the Barcelona subway. Mm-hmm. And by far, there's no question in my mind, the most disgusting smelling subway system is
Paris.
Take a guess. You got it. Exactly. By not only a mile.
You know, all
like
they eat is bread and cheese. So that like maybe part
you
of
know
it.
What? You got a point. And it's still, you got the urine. I mean, you got that baseline. You got that baseline New York City smell. But there is a human body odor smell that is like top of it, on top of the regular standard urine smell that is caustic. It is horrible. Like it's so, I think the subway system in Barcelona is awesome, totally underrated. The subway system in Montreal is really good. I think the subway system in a lot of these places are great. The most disgusting smelling subway system, by no question in my mind, it's Paris, but especially in August, because that seems Paris in August.
I'll
is
bet
like,
it's just warm and damp too.
Paris in August, we should be paid to go to Paris in August. Paris in August is unfortunately the place where the only time I've ever gone is because that's the cheapest time and I'm just a cheapskate.
Because no one wants to go there.
Paris
not at that
in
time.
August, Paris in August has got such a pong, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to the point where the people in Paris should be a little bit more chill because it's like a thousand Christmas, a thousand New Year's Eves. It's Grand Central. I mean, it's unbelievable in Times Square, the diaper pyramid.
Pyramid in August is like that's going to be the title of your like Paris travel guide.
The Paris in the summer is so fetid. It burns the nostril hair in your nose. It's everything about it is so, you don't like, you're in the subway system in New York and you're cruising around. You're like, okay, you get acclimated to it. It's fine. You're in this in Paris in August. You're constantly shocked at how worse it gets smelling. Worse it smells, way worse.
That sounds lovely. I've never been to, actually I've never been anywhere in France.
Oh, really? You're a big Italy person.
I am a big Italy person, but it's like, it's kind of silly because I recently made my dad sent me a random text message that was just like, how many countries have you visited? Like, you know, apropos of nothing. So I had to make a list. And I tend to go back to the same places because I like what I like. And if I have the money to travel, I'm like, oh, I really want to go back and see this thing again. Anyways, but yeah, I think I came up with like 17 countries and France was not one of them, which is very silly because I go to the countries around it. But I don't know. Like there's never been anything particular about France that has had a draw for me. Now, I will say I've been to Barcelona. It's the only place I've been in Spain. And I did experience people throwing their dirty kitty litter out of the second story windows directly under the street, which was something I did not like. But I actually had a really terrible time there. But a lot of that was due to the company I was with. So I'm not going to judge it too harshly. And I would like to go back at some point. But
go June and July, I'm going to be teaching down there.
You know, every time I see that, I'm just like, ugh, this could be my year. This could be the year where like Barcelona is like my new favorite place.
I understand what you're saying. I could, of all foreign countries, I could move to Barcelona. That's the only one I could move to. And I have all the shit talking I've said about Paris. I have a real soft spot for Paris. My dad took me there when I was younger. So like I go, when I go there, I go to the places my dad took me to. I have a real soft spot for Paris.
Okay, well, that's adorable.
But Barcelona, if Hill and I were just decided, all right, let's cut it loose, I could definitely finish off my days in Barcelona. No problem.
See, I just want like the travel guide as seen through Fader's eyes, like anywhere. I'm just curious about like everywhere that you've been now, because I feel like you have a weird and unique perspective on everything. But like,
well,
so my friend Ellen, Crafts with Ellen, she goes to Paris fairly regularly. She has her places that she likes there. And I remember just being like, well, what is it that you like there? Like, what in particular is something that you like? And she's like, there's just certain places I like to go, and I like to look at certain buildings. And she's like, I will take you there. I will take you to Paris. I will show you my favorite places. I'm like, see, this is what I need. I need a reason. Like, I wouldn't just go to Paris to just walk the streets and marvel at being in Paris, right? And like the same for her with Italy. She's like, well, what is it about Italy? And I was like, I don't know, you just have to be there and feel like you're there.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, okay, we'll make a deal. I will take you to Italy. We'll go look at all my favorite things. And we'll go to Paris and we'll look at all your favorite things. And then we'll both have a reason to love it, right? And it's like you with your dad. If you had not gone with him, as you know, at a formative age, you might not feel about it the way that you do now. It gave you something to automatically love and associate with something that you love.
It's weird because like right now I'm 51 and I was born when my dad was 50, but he has my sisters were 20 years older than I was. So the crazy part is like my daughter in my age is the same as my dad and his first daughter. So like the age ratio is the same. So like there's a lot of connection there, but I have a lot of like fond memories of back then. But the cool part is now I have it with my daughter. So it's like we have a really, it's like I get, I'm emotional is a very strong word. I'm not going to start tearing up for God's sakes, but I do have these nice kind of like good moments of like fond memories of him when I go to the same places with my kid.
Right.
So like I have very fond memories of Paris. I have very unfond memories of Paris. But I do love traveling with my wife and daughter. It's been the most fun of all of it.
You guys are such a pod. Like I just, there are a few people on Instagram. Like there's, you know, a couple friend of mine, Daniel and Tamarin, who I've just like anything they do, I'm like, I love your relationship. Like, I just like seeing you traveling together and being happy and like walking your dog. And then the three of you are another pod where I'm just like, anything your family does, it just looks like the best thing I've ever seen. Just because you're all having fun together. Like, you could be doing anything and I'd be like, that is the best thing I've ever seen.
Well, it's been, you know, the funny thing is like any travel we do, a lot of it is, you know, we're, like I said, we go to Paris. If we do go to Paris, it's going to be the cheapest time of the year. I mean, we've spent our time and our energy and money on not things, but like experiences. So
yes.
Growing up, we would take Lila to different places. I mean, she wouldn't have moved to California to go to college if we hadn't done a lot of traveling. She would have been like a lot of kids in her age in our area were just like, they never left the area. So she's much more adventurous, and I think that's fun. And we also have, and Hillary is a great tour director. Like she is, like she, when we go somewhere, she researches it and she comes up with itineraries, and we just like salute and go, and we usually have a lot of laughs. And it is nice when I don't have to like think of everything we got to do, and it's, we have a system in place. It's like, you know, me, Hillary, and I've been together for almost 30 years. So it's been like it all works out, and we're just very fortunate to be the team that we are. So it's very nice of you to say that. We do have a good time. I mean, it's not like perfect. I mean, sometimes we're
not
screaming at each other. You know, I frankly, Lila was mad at me because I bit her leg yesterday.
Wow.
I don't know what happened. She was pissed.
I don't know what happened.
I'm just telling you. You want me to not tell you the truth?
I don't want you to
think it's all like perfect. But we're sitting on a couch. She had a leg up, and I decided to bite her leg. But I didn't like, And then she says, "You just bit me." And I'm like, "Nah, I didn't really bite you." I said, she's like, "What are you talking about? I felt all your teeth." And I'm like, "No, I didn't really. No, you." And then she says, "Now you're gaslighting me. I know you bit me." And I said, "It's kind of like when the dog grabs your hand. You know, it's like, you're not biting you. She's just kind of grabbing onto you."
Wow.
She's like, "Well, what were you thinking?" I'm like, "I don't know. You had some, you know, you had a pair of pants on. I thought, let's fucking bite that leg and see what happens." And I wasn't really thinking about it too much.
Clearly.
But it left an impression on her for the rest of the night. She's like, "I can't believe you bit me." I'm like, you gotta stop saying it that way because it really sounds terrible.
I really hope that she went on her radio show and started, "You know what? You know, you want to hear a story about my dad? My dad bit my leg, you know, because you did." And also, let me say, that is both the move of a dad. That is a super dad move. It's also the move of a toddler.
Yeah, that's right. I'm biting a 20-year-old woman. I mean, what the fuck
okay,
is wrong
it sounds
with
even
me?
Worse when you say it that way.
That's terrible. I'm terrible. I bit this 20-year-old woman's leg. I mean, that is outrageous. So here's the funny story. A lot of it came up. We were talking about it last night, all night. And they were just, my wife said, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "I don't know." But when I was very young, apparently the story in my family was my mother was taking the rest of her family on a tour of the World Trade Center. Obviously, this is when I was very young.
Yeah.
And apparently, I've been told I was in a stroller and I was getting very antsy and I wanted some candy. And apparently, as the story goes, I said, "Mom, I want some candy." And she goes, "You're not going to get any candy." And she goes, "If you don't," and I said, "If you don't give me some candy, I'm going to bite your leg."
Wow.
That's apparently what I said. "I'm going to bite your leg." And then that, I don't know if it escalated any farther than that. But Hillary, my daughter Lila, was saying to me, she's like, "I know why you did that." I said, "Well, here's why it didn't happen, because if she was any closer to me, I would have bit her leg. You just had your leg close enough to me to get in front of me.
It's your go-to move.
If my mother had, God bless her, if she had gotten any closer, she would have gotten a couple of teeth. I mean, she would have given her a bite. She didn't give me that candy.
I mean, so as a biter, I can't understand that. It was maybe a big problem when I was a child, which the words I heard a lot were, "Jesse, no biting. No biting." I was like a dog. I was like a bad puppy. No biting.
No biting.
But see, my problem was I just really liked the way it feels to sink your teeth into something. And turns out human flesh, one of those things is really fun to,
wow.
You know, and I'm the youngest of four, right? Like, I can't fight back. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I bite an ankle. Like, that's what I can reach. The teeth are what I've got. Like, I can't imagine what my defenses were before I grew teeth.
Mm.
But, yeah, I was a big-time biter. And, like, my I slept in bunk beds with my sister, and the guardrail for the bunk bed was like this, you know, this wood panel, and it had this like lacquer coating over it that was, you know, pretty thick. And I very quickly discovered that when you just really bite down onto it, it crunches right through the coating and into the soft wood. It was like, I can remember how it felt. It felt glorious. And I just chewed the shit out of my guardrail. And like, my mom would come in the morning and be like, "Jesse, please stop chewing on the bed. Like, I don't know what to do with this." Like, she had three kids who did not gnaw on the furniture. And then she had me, and it was just always this, like, tired sound in her voice. "Jesse, please stop chewing on the furniture. Please stop picking the popcorn off the ceiling and putting it in the light fixture. Like, please stop digging holes in the drywall with the cuticle pusher. Like, why are you going into the garage and just cutting chunks off of your hair?" Like, these are problems that my mom had with me, you know? But yeah, the biting was a big one. It took me a long time to get over that one. And I will say, I do bite my dad. But in my defense, he thinks that his sausage fingers will fit up my nose. And he really tries to shove his fingers up my nose.
But that's that.
That deserves a bite.
Well, you know, I don't even like the word bite because I don't feel like I bit my daughter.
Well, I'm going to have to talk to her about this.
She says, "No, Dad, you bit me." I'm like, no, I didn't bite hard. I just kind of grabbed you with my mouth, with my teeth. I didn't.
She's like, I felt molars. It was a bite.
So my biting history started when I was 4, and now it's bookended to 51.
Yeah.
So my scales, but funny enough, I was listening to Howard Stern as I do, and he was telling a story when he was younger. He used to chew through the furniture.
Yeah, it feels amazing.
He said, and my parents used to think I was crazy. Mm. She said, we're raising a beaver. Why are you chewing all the furniture? I was like, and his father would come home and he's sitting there, you know, gnawing on the leg of a furniture. What the fuck is going on here with you chewing on? And he made this comment saying that they thought that it was some sort of psychological thing where he wasn't getting nurtured enough. He wasn't getting fed enough. And he was looking for some sort of like nurturing by chewing on the furniture. But he painted this picture of like gnawing on a leg of a table, like a beaver would try to fell a tree.
See,
with his
I
teeth.
Love that. That's not like that to me. I'm like, ah, yes, I could totally see doing that. Like, I get that. I feel right in line with that. I would chew on a table leg, and that, like, and it would feel amazing. I know it would. Because I have chewed furniture before. Like, if you have not chewed furniture, then you cannot judge me. And I'm not talking about, like, more modern-day furniture where it's like, you can't chew on, like, an IKEA table. Like, it's particle board with, like, melamine on top. Like, no. That's weird. Sorry, guys, but that's weird.
You need some antique wood to chew on.
Exactly, with, like, a really thick, crunchy lacquer on it just to, you know, get stuck in your teeth, like... I mean, doesn't that sound amazing?
No, well, now that I think, no, I can't, if I'm being honest with you, like, I'm still mortified that I told the story that I bit my daughter.
That you bit your daughter?
That I grabbed onto her with my teeth.
That you bit a 20-year-old woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad. That sounds really bad.
Yeah. Oh. And she wasn't even doing it. She was just sitting there living her life.
All right, let's change the conversation. I'm really uncomfortable with this. I'm really, really uncomfortable. So
that's
how
amazing.
Are things going? Listen to this segue. So how are things going out in Joshua Tree?
Seamless segue. Joshua Tree, yeah, it's bonkers. So the end of the year for us was kind of crazy. You know, Ben has been in the process of building a new house for what seems like 150 years now. As we had a lot of slowdowns with COVID. And he was like, okay, we're going to host Thanksgiving at the new house. And I was like, the new house is A, not done, and also, like, nothing's hooked up and there's no furniture. So, like, that sounds like a bad idea to me. He's like, no. This is going to push us to get it done. And I was like, oh. I hate every part of this, because the thing is, like, Ben is really good at taking things in stride, and, like, I am especially bad at taking things in stride. I will freak out and worry about everything. And he has a great way of being like, okay, you know, here's our list of like 100 things to do today. And I'm like, okay, we're gonna do all of them. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, we can never do this. But at the end of the day, Ben will check off like one thing and be like, ah, we got this thing done. Like, that was a good day of work, which I think is a healthy attitude. But for me, I'm like, yeah, but we didn't do 99 things that are on this list that are absolutely impossible to do, which is a very unhealthy attitude to have. So there's a little bit of that mix going on. We did end up hosting Thanksgiving. Like, whole family came, and Ben decided that he didn't want to cook a turkey. He wanted to cook prime rib on his new Weber grill, which turned out really great. But of course, then my dad was like, but what about turkey? So my mom cooked a 16-pound turkey in the new kitchen. So we had turkey and prime rib. It was a very meaty Thanksgiving. And we got some things done. So we did eat. We sat on folding chairs with a folding table.
Okay.
But, like, the kitchen had a refrigerator, the oven worked, the sink was installed, like, all of those things. And also, Ben has been staying in the new house since Thanksgiving. And I've been in the rental house. And so it's like, I have my own house. It's been great. I just walk around in my underpants all day long. It's fantastic. But my job now is to...
Chewing on furniture.
I'm just chewing on... Well, see, the thing is, Ben makes concrete furniture. His furniture is like concrete, metal, and Lego. And I'm actually wondering, did he adopt those styles so that his little sister, who works for him, doesn't put teeth mark on all this furniture? There's no way to tell.
There's got to be something there. There's got to be something
There's
there.
no way to tell. No one will ever know.
There has got to be something there where he obviously took all of his experiences over life and as an industrial designer and a furniture designer and says, you know, these are great products, but guess what? He hardly ever uses wood. He got glass. He got, and it may be you are his muse because it's like,
That's so
can
weird.
Jessie destroy it with her
With
teeth?
her little bitey teeth.
Yeah. So it's
Like,
like you she's maybe you know maybe you need a raise for that. You
you
need
know what? I do
inspiration.
need a raise for
You
not
should tell
chewing
her
on his
that.
furniture.
Yes. See, all he saw you all when you're a kid just like chewing on the railings. She's like, I can't be making it.
Well, he was also the person that I bit the most as a child.
This is 100%. This is a complete direct your biting has made him who he is.
Well,
You should
not
be, you
even
know, you should be
that.
thrilled.
Like, so there's like 7 years difference, age difference between the two of us. And another thing that I maybe, like, I don't remember, maybe because I blocked it out of my memory, but my mom will say how, like, Ben has always been into building things, constructing things, and like, how do these things work together? He's always been like that. So he would build these towers and forts and everything, and I would just like run through and like haymaker things down, you know, and I was like two, three around there. And just whatever he would build, I would just come in and just absolutely destroy, like toddler Godzilla. And so, like, again, maybe he like makes a chair out of concrete so that his little sister doesn't either just pull it apart with her like little rat hands or just chew on it like beaver style. This is all protective.
You know, when you get a shirt or something and it says inspected by number by Inspector 81,
Yes.
you're Inspector 81.
That could be me.
You're the inspector. He has built in the perfect quality control for all of his stuff. I imagine every time you talk about it, I imagine you like a little chipmunk just chewing on stuff. You're walking around and just start, you turn the corner and then you just sink your teeth into something. And he's made it now like he knows, I cannot allow this. This has got to be part of the, this is going to be anti Jess teeth product.
Yeah, I
It,
mean, I think
you.
I should start putting stickers on things that they are inspected by
Bitten
me.
by Jess.
Bitten by Jess, exactly. There's gonna be a whole line of things that are bitten by Jess. But like,
You deserve some credit here. You're like the it's like a terrorizing muse
well,
who just destroys.
I remember feeling like I felt like validated in a way that my mom didn't understand when like, okay, so when we were kids, we had rabbits, and one thing rabbits need is something to chew on so
Yeah.
their teeth don't grow too long. And I remember my mom
Huh.
explaining this to me, and I remember looking at her and being like, and yet you judge me. You judge me for just keeping my teeth in at the proper length. You know, because I didn't understand certain physiological differences between humans and rabbits. I got there eventually. But yeah, I remember just looking at the rabbit and being like, oh, you're so lucky. Like no one judges you. It's just like chewing on this block
You
of
have
wood.
they have to the rabbit turns, you say, Jess, I have to,
Yeah.
otherwise my teeth are going to grow into my chin.
And I'm
I
like,
have no choice.
samesies. I
I
have to. My teeth aren't going to grow
have
that
to.
long, but I have to for reasons. I
Yeah.
can't explain it. I don't know how minds work, especially not
Oh.
my own. But I do know how teeth feel.
Do you ever get to you ever go to Running Man or Running Man Burning Man?
I've never been to Burning Man. I have always wanted to go for the week of setup because I want to see all the things, but
Yeah.
quite honestly, I don't want to be there when all the people are there
Yeah.
because that's the part that I find difficult is like people who go to Burning Man.
Yeah. I figured it'd be are you close to Burning Man?
Not close,
Oh, okay.
but like my oldest brother, Nate, he's been to like so many burning mans, burning men. Wow,
Burning
what is
Men.
the plural of burning man?
Burning Mans.
Burning mans. Okay, that's uncomfortable. But like since like not the beginning, but since the early days, like he was one of those people who would go to Burning Man when everyone else was like, I don't know, they're probably out there worshiping the devil, you know, like how people get. And like Ben has gone to a bunch of them. But like I want to go and see it set up. I want to see it like come up out of the desert, come up from nothing, and then just like fuck off as soon as all the people get there.
It's interesting because my business partner Tony's dad, they're from Reno. And he was one of the early engineers of Burning Man. And he goes every year and helps the engine. He's one of the welders, fabricators, and engineers. So they have gone since the beginning. And Tony, he used to go all the time. And he knows all the tricks. And, you know, they get out like an RV or something like that. And it is pretty fascinating. I do talk, and I helped build a friend of mine who actually owns this building had got a very small Jeep, and I helped build parts that would go on to, it would go to the playa.
Oh, fun. But,
yeah, so I got to build this, like a platform that fit into the trailer hitch so he could have people riding on the back. And then I had this old sculpture I made for him. I made this Impala skull out of steel, and we mounted to the roof. The hood of the car, and he it was quite an interesting thing. But I tell you, when I see you in the desert, and I think about Burning Man, especially because I know so many people go. I don't think I could last 2 hours in the dirt. The dust and the sand I can just feel myself taking all the gunk out of my eyes. I don't do well in the desert.
That's a shame, because I feel like I can really picture you in like full sand attire with just like things draped over your face and just like looking like a total badass. I think that'd be a great look for you.
I don't think so. See, we've been really getting deep into the 23andMe, and I'm 48% Ashkenazi Jew.
Uh-huh.
Those are not the desert Jews.
Let me tell you. This is like when I say I'm a music Asian, not a math Asian. You're like, we're not desert Jews.
I'm not. I mean, if it had to, I guess. But yeah, my DNA is not desert Jews. My DNA is like, you know, like the Mongols and the, you know, the Cossacks and all the Russians. I couldn't handle the Sahara. That's for sure. And I just feel it in my deep down in my soul that I am definitely not a desert Jew.
Yeah. I mean, neither am I, but I do live in the desert. And you know what? I love it. I had never thought about living in the desert before Ben was like, I need you to move to the desert. And I was just like, okay. I would have never thought about it. But the truth is, I have cold bones. I'm house sitting right now. I'm in like Central California, close-ish to the ocean. And it's like, you know, 60 degrees. I'm like, I am so cold all the time. My tiny little bird bones are just filled with ice now. Like, I don't know what it is. I have like no ability to regulate my own temperature. And when it's under 70 degrees, I need to wear two sweatshirts. And like, if there's any moisture in the air at all, I'm just like, I feel like an icicle. So the desert has actually, I've done pretty well out there. Like, I can handle the heat a lot better than I can handle the cold.
Yeah.
So it's worked.
In our family, we have indoor winter clothes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there's always everyone, especially like now, it was snowing all day and it's cold. We got the house at a good temperature, but we're all always in sweaters. We always have a hoodie. There's a picture of the three of us. We have hoodies up and hats on, and like it's like there's no heat on in the house at all. We're like real, because my wife's from Wisconsin, so I mean she knows cold. I mean, I was in Wisconsin one time when it was freezing, and it was like below 25 or something like that. It was so cold that they don't let you go outside.
Yeah.
Like, there's not even a question of you're not going outside. Like, you can't, I mean, it's madness. And so she's used to kind of, and her parents are very like off the grid types. And so it's, everything's fireplace heat, and you're not heating a big house with a fireplace, that's for sure. So she's used to this kind of like, you know, wool indoor winter clothes lifestyle. She don't love it, but she's comfortable with it. So I don't know. I don't know, but it sucks, but I would take that over desert life. I see these videos of you where you're wearing your Ray-Bans and then the sand is kind of going through your hair and all your face, and I'm just like, oh my God, oh my God. She's got
a just holding a cactus in one hand and a skull in the other. Like, yeah, you're just really painting a
picture on of me. Chewing on a leg of a chair.
And all I got a chair leg in my mouth.
All I can think of is like, God, if she just wipes her eye, it's going to be like the sand of the hourglass coming off of her.
I feel like this is an image that I now have to recreate. Like, I'll have to like, okay, at 53 minutes, I'm going to timestamp this so I know exactly how to recreate this picture. And except I do not wear Ray-Bans. How dare you? I wear high specs.
You used to wear Ray-Bans.
I have never worn a Ray-Ban in my life.
Ray-Ban style aviator glasses.
I have a bunch of the gold sunglasses that I bought because they don't sell anymore. And I found like the last 7 pairs on the internet by a company whose name is French that I'm not even going to pretend that I can pronounce.
Okay.
But those purple sunglasses that I wear all the time now, those are high specs, safety specs.
Okay. Fair. That's fair. I always saw you as like a Ray-Ban type. I'm Ray-Ban dyed in the wool Ray-Ban. I'm like, my shit is from like the 70s Ray-Ban. Like, my mom used to wear Ray-Bans, and I'm a Ray-Ban guy.
My sunglasses have choice. Like, my entire life has been like, what are the coolest sunglasses that the thrift store has to offer?
All right.
So it's like, my sunglasses historically have always been in the 50 cent to $2 range, which kind of sucked. Like, I hate finding things I love at a thrift store because I'm like, you're never going to find that again. And if there's one thing we know about me, it's that I like to wear the same thing every day until I die. By the way, you don't know it right now because you don't turn on your camera because you hate looking at me, but I am wearing a Fader Knives hoodie.
You're the best.
I know. I am. You would never know that, but I am. You're welcome.
I just want you to know I have a uniform too. My uniform has changed over years, but I have definitely a Jeff Fader uniform. And my wife has told me, totally uniform. Like, did, I used to be.
Did you realize it, or did she have to tell you?
I slowly knew it, but I didn't feel like I needed to, like. It wasn't like, hey, hell, I bit our kid. You know, I didn't feel like I had to announce it. And it wasn't like some of pride. But funny thing is my kid has become, she goes to thrift stores, and she took me to a thrift store, and they had a whole rack of used Carhartt double front pants.
Mm.
$150, $200. And my kid was like, dude, you got like $1,000 worth of fucking Carhartt pants at home. I'm like, you're damn right.
Yeah.
So I love the Carhartt pants, except for the just after you wash them, it's like cardboard.
Yeah.
I've gotten myself into the Patagonia work pants, which I love. The cat Patagonia work pants. Okay. They got deep pockets, and I fucking love them. And then I found a number of years ago this L.L. Bean flannel shirt that was the shirt that my grandfather used to wear all the time, my mother's father. And every time I'd visit him, he'd have that shirt on. And it's like, it's a white with, if you see me wearing a flannel shirt, you'll know it. And I bought 3 of them.
Yep.
And it's my grandfather's shirt. And I like, that is part of, like, I wear that shirt. Like, I wear that Patagonia shirt, that L.L. Bean. It's like a classic old school, old man, old grandpa kind of flannel shirt. That is like part of the uniform.
Oh, I love a good grandpa shirt.
Yeah, no, it's like when I feel as though he's with me when I, you know, I mean, I don't think about it that hard, but I definitely know that that's part of the uniform. And then I got the scarf, I got the, zip up hoodie. And then the Carhartt vest, and that's kind of the uniform. And now
the vest with your logo on it, which I love.
Yeah, yeah, the logo is cool. So yeah, I got the logo on it, and then I'm a vest guy. My dad was a big vest guy. He used to have wear like a barber, you know, it's that.
You're just English, making sounds.
I don't know. I'm just gurgling into the microphone.
I'm just like, yes, I know it well. And in my head, I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
No, it's like a UK company. It's called Barbour. Barbour.
Like B-A-R-B-O-U-R?
Yeah. And he
okay, yeah,
that
I know what you're talking about.
He got me into vests. So I feel as though like my uniform is relatively, you know, there's like a reason behind every piece. So it's like, I find that to be, as I've gotten older, it's kind of nice that I have these little things that I like to wear and the reasoning behind it and the kind of memories, my grandfather, my father and stuff like that. So
I love it. And also, cause like, there's something about you wearing a scarf that just like, it feels like it shouldn't go. It's so funny because if I had just seen like a picture of you in your shop or with your sign and you've got your out, you know, you're wearing Carhartt vest, but you're wearing that scarf and be like, this guy is definitely European. Because like if you were from America, you'd be wearing a gator, right? Like some kind of like, you know, and this isn't like a gators against scarves thing. It's just like, I don't see a lot of people in a workshop wearing a scarf.
Well, the scarves used to be much fruitier.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You like a fruity scarf, do you?
Well, I'll tell you. You really want to know.
I do.
My roommate, Miles. I had a roommate in college. His name was Miles Van Rensselaer.
Is he the one who called you Fades?
Yeah, he's the one who called me Fades, right? And he was crazy. He's wild. He was just like, there was something about him. He was like, he was unique and original and charming and weird and funny, and he'd make noises, and he's just like everything. He just danced to his own drummer, and we were roommates in freshmen and roommates, and then we were roommates as seniors, and I loved everything about him. And he'd have these weird uniforms. Like he went to Indonesia on a like first semester, and he found out that you could have your own clothes designed very inexpensively.
Oh yeah.
So he was making these crazy clothes, like where the, instead of like, you know, like one of those Henley shirts where you button mm-hmm. up, you know, towards the, you know, from the your chest up and then it buttons up.
Oh yeah, that's the Ben special.
Right. So then he would change it. He's like, I want the buttons, but I want them on my shoulder. So the buttons on one side of his shoulder would go up. He just would just design clothes that were crazy, and he would, and then he came back and he'd wear them, and he was fucking wild. And he loved if it, you know, he would call, you know what buttercups are?
I mean, it sounds like something I don't want to know, but please tell me what that means.
buttercups are like a Chelsea boot, but there's a zipper on the side.
Oh, okay.
It's like
okay.
The kind of boot that like...
Wait, why is it called a buttercup?
I don't know why we called them buttercups. You'd call them buttercups.
Okay.
And it would be like if you were watching an old episode of The Monkees,
uh-huh.
and you see Peter Tork and Michael Nesmith and Mickey Dolenz, and then you could see that fucking ridiculous boot,
yep.
and he would just zip them up the side, and he'd call them his fruity actor boots.
Nice.
And then he'd call them buttercups, and he just had all this style, and he really got me. There's a picture of the two of us. He used to dye his clothes purple, and he had these shirts, and we dye each other's shirts, and he gave me this dyed pink shirt, and I gave him one of my Fine Architectural Metalsmith shirts, and there are these pictures of the two. I'll put them in if you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, I will post this picture, and then I'll post some pictures of me and my roommate Miles.
Yes.
So he really kind of like, he was so interesting, and he was an awesome sculptor and just an interesting guy. And he would really like, he would really be interested in like wild, you know, these little moments of wild color. So when Lila was very young, we went down to Mexico City and there were these crazy scarves. And Hillary's like, you should put this on. And I put it on, it was bananas. And then, but at the same time, I really liked it. And my wife is a huge scarf person, so she really kind of got me into scarves. And I call them these fruity scarves, and I would wear them all the time. And then my uniform was the Carhartt pants and the jacket and the fruity scarf and everything like that. And we called it the Ashkenazi Gaucho. That was the Ashkenazi Gaucho. And then the problem was like they were getting like they were so colorful, they were getting really filthy in the shop.
Yeah.
But and it just looks scuzzy. So I found these like tan, like I guess they're military military colored scarves, and I have to have them. Like my neck, I have to have them. There's a certain temperature where the temperature drops, and I have to have these scarves.
Yeah.
So like I got a pile of these, just like, you know, scarves. It makes me feel like I could be a desert Jew, but I really am not. It ain't gonna happen.
I think that's part of why, like, I have this like image in my head, and a lot of it has to do with the scarf, where you just like kind of pull it up over your nose and pull your dust goggles down. Like, I mean, you
Dune
could
Jr.
totally rule that book.
Dune Jr. You think I'm a little Dune Jr.?
Absolutely.
I don't think so.
Kyle MacLachlan's got nothing on you.
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, yeah, you gotta have a scarf. So Hillary, it's gotten to the point over the years that if I go out and I don't have a scarf, I feel like super duper cold.
Right.
So like I'll do scarf until mid spring. I'll do scarf, and then scarfs are gone. And then, but I do have some fruity ones that you can, if you look deep in the annals of Fader Knives on Instagram, you'll see some fruity scarves. But I have there you go. You've unlocked some new things.
Achievement unlocked. You've collected unlocked. Fruity scarves.
Buttercup and fruity scarves. And fruity, you say fruity with like just, there's nothing but love.
Absolutely.
Like, there's no insult. It's just like, oh, look at that.
No, there's no connotation. It's just like at it and you're like, oh, yeah, you're right. That is a fruity scarf.
You got to get me that like fruity scarf over there. You got to, you know, I need to pair them fruity scarf over there.
What's so crazy to me is like, okay, so I have never had like anything remotely close to a fashion sense, and like I can remember as a kid, like just really trying to match clothes, because I'm told like you have to match clothes. I'm like, well, how do you know if colors match? And like nobody could explain that to me. I know everything matches with black, or at least nothing clashes with black. And I know that like you can wear blue jeans with just about everything, but other than that, like I've never understood what other people see as like these things match. It's like, I want to wear what's comfortable, what I like. But then it's like, no, you're weird and homeschooled. Don't do that. So I was always like fairly specific about my clothes, not because like I loved them or I, you know, wanted certain colors, but it's just like, I was just really trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And like not even to fit in, but just to not stand out and be like, ah, this one doesn't know what she's doing, right? And so I can remember, like, even as recently as a year ago, I went out to eat with my friend Eleanor, and she was telling me about this like knitted sweatshirt that she had that had like baby doll heads sewn to it. And like, because she's an artist, so like obviously she's gonna wear a sweatshirt that has baby doll heads sewn to it. But I'm just looking at her, I was like, how do you know you can do that though? Like, how do you know that you can wear things like that? And she's just like, I don't know what that means. Cause like, I was talking to my sister about how, you know, I grew up in the 90s, and I feel like everything was very clear about, like, these are the things you wear, these are the things you don't wear. If you look like this, you're okay. If you look like that, everyone hates you, you know? And, like, I'm not saying that's good, but, like, for a kid like me who's maybe not on the most neurotypical pathway that was ever created, I'm like, okay, yeah, this is really easy. These are loser clothes. These are cool clothes. I'm not trying to be cool. I just don't want to be labeled as a loser, right? And like, it was really clear. And that is less clear now. And that is a great thing for the world. It is a terrible thing for me, because I don't know what are the right clothes to wear, because now you can wear anything and there are no rules, and I'm freaking out. And I'm like, hooray for everyone who has the freedom to wear what they want. But also, like, how do I know what clothes are cool? Like, I'm still stuck in this headspace of like, okay, but like, are flares back? Or is it just like you can wear flares if you're like, you know, going to a fun part? Like, I don't know. I don't know
What's
any of these things. Like
flare
legged pants, right? So it's like they're big in the 70s, and then they made a resurgence in the 90s. And then they went away, and now they're kind of coming back. And like, and you know, as a person who is entering the tender age of midlife crisis, my Instagram is filled with women my age who are going to Target and being like, why are the fashion styles from the 90s back at Target, right? Where it's like, now it's like cool and vintage for their kids to wear. And so, like, you know, women are collectively freaking out over this. But like, how do we know when it's okay to wear the clothes or not?
You know,
and
what
Like, I know that it doesn't matter, but also, like, how do you know if you're wearing loser clothes?
The crazy part is, well, number one, I grew up in the 70s, 80s, and the 90s. So what I got was I ended up, my high school years were kind of like, is when grunge started. So it allowed me to just kind of look like a schlub all the time. And that was nice. Socially acceptable. I found that when I was in college, there were so many people who are ahead of themselves in terms of fashion, but they were so confident in the clothes that they were wearing, even when people were like, what the fuck is that guy doing? You know, in the face of fashion persecution, they were making it happen. And I feel as though it's a confidence that not a lot of people have. Like, I don't want to, I don't give a shit anymore, but at the time, when I was younger, I was concerned with how I dressed, just because I was by myself all the time. I didn't have, my family was gone. I was basically raising myself from, you know, the teens on. I was alone so much, I didn't want to push people away. I wanted to invite people. So I was concerned with how I looked, because I was just like, I have no one. I need people. So that is, I think it's a confidence that not a lot of people have.
Right. That's a fair statement. Cause I'm like, again, I'm also the last of four. And,
well, just to let you know, fashion is total confidence. I mean, the worst clothes I've ever seen on human beings are, I don't know if you've ever watched, if you are a basketball fan at all, but if you see the guys do the walking in the stadium, and mm-hmm. there'll be cameras watching these guys, go watch some of these fucking basketball players who should have no business wearing clothes that they're wearing. There's this one guy who plays for the Pacers. His name is Tyrese Halliburton. He wore something that was so crazy. Some of these guys don't know what the fuck they're doing. It's like, it's a unnecessary confidence. Tyrese Halliburton, if you look up Tyrese Halliburton, at one point he's wearing a long coat that has a lot of, I'm not making too many assertions, but there's a lot of Nazi, it looks like a 1945 SS coat, right? With a black, you know, line, the whole, it's, it looks like a real, you know, SS Gestapo looking jacket. But then he's got these stripes of, like, Cookie Monster fuzz all over it. I'm not kidding you. It's like there's these lines of, like, it's like they ripped up the Cookie Monster puppet and they sewed that in there, and you're just looking at this motherfucker and he's confident as hell that he looks awesome. And it's like Gestapo Cookie Monster and it's like fucking massive, and I don't know what to do, because I'm just like, I know he's pushing it, and these basketball players are pushing fashion, but some of this ain't it. And somebody's telling him to do this crazy stuff, and I don't get it.
I mean, it sounds like something that, like if you went to art school and you were, like, focused on textiles, and you're like, this is my thesis coat, where it's like, it says something about, apparently, like, Nazis and Cookie Monster. It comes with, like, its own 10-page description. That's kind of what this sounds like to me.
I'm going to find this. Tyrese Halliburton with this goddamn coat. If you just look up Tyrese Halliburton coats, there are a lot of wild coats, but I need to find this one. It has a good old Cookie Monster on it, because it is, I have to send it to you, because I need you to agree with me.
Yeah, I need you to agree that I am correct.
I found it.
Oh, dear.
I found it. All right. So here we go. I'm sending it to you right now.
Okay. this is great radio.
Well, yeah. I only need a second.
To be fair, though, like...
Go ahead.
Podcasts that I listen to, I always find it endearing and hilarious when they're, like, sharing things that you can't see, because, like, I like podcasts for, like, the voyeuristic eavesdropping nature of it. Like, I am listening to a conversation between two people that I am not a part of. And so when there's, like, parts that I can't access, I'm kind of like, huh, that's funny. You know, I like that. So I hope, well, like, at least one other person likes that,
but
too.
Now we have to segment. If you've listened to the Full Blast podcast on the beginning of the year, you will know that Jesse and I also hit some weird news, much like we do with Ben Snoer. One of the craziest parts of when Jesse and I podcast is we have this fixation, I would say it's a fixation, on Alec Baldwin and his family. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why is I've been a fan of Alec Baldwin's craziness for, let's just say, 15 years. 15 years of him just doing crazy stuff as a New Yorker and as a relatively obnoxious person. And popular, but crazy. It's very Shakespearean. My first foray into weird Alec Baldwin news was he left this incredibly vicious voicemail to his daughter who leaked it to the press. And he, and that was like, I played that audio. I must have listened to that that voicemail message like 20 times. It's crazy how he talks to her. And it's very dramatic and all this stuff, and he's really become quite an interesting piece of work. He's also, in our last episode a year ago, he shot somebody inadvertently on the set of Rust. And our favorite thing to talk about, which is what I want to bring up, is his wife. Hilaria. So is there anything you'd like to add before we get into a little bit of Baldwin news? Or
I would like just to add that in the reel that you most recently sent me concerning Hilaria Baldwin, how in the caption they called her a self-styled Spaniard, which is just the sickest burn that I've ever heard. Self-styled Spaniard Hilaria Baldwin.
So the crazy thing is and you know, I think we're joking around about it. We're not making it crazy. We're not being vicious towards the Baldwin family. I mean, the Baldwin family is amazing just because it's what happens when you bring a lot of money and fame to a family from Long Island.
With like two types of crazy.
It's unnecessary. It's just the way it's like. He was so vicious towards politicians, and he's just like, he's the guy who's going to curse at you across the street. He punches reporters. He's just mad, and he's just very, but he's also very, like, he's a very big actor, but he's also this fucking dude from Hempstead, Long Island. You know, when it comes down to it, like, so he married this woman, Hilaria Baldwin, and the most amazing thing is Hilaria Baldwin is from Boston. She's originally from Boston. She's an American from Boston. But somehow, over time, she does a lot of video and yoga stuff, and I think that she goes on these TV shows. And she has this incredible fascination with Spain to the point where she tells people she's from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
But the best part is, and this is what we're going to talk about, the best part is she pretends, I think, she pretends that she doesn't know the English word for something. She's from Boston, and she didn't live in Spain.
She did not grow up in Spain. Also,
she did not grow up in Spain. Her family's not Spanish.
Let me point out that when Alec Baldwin married her, like, she was Hilary Baldwin, or whatever her last name was, but Hilary is her name. Hilaria is part of her self-styled Spaniard persona. Her name is Hilary.
He's gone on the letter David Letterman to describe as he's married to a Spanish woman.
Like, she got like a Latina of the Year award from Sun Magazine or something like that. Like something that was specifically related to her being a Spanish lady. And she's like, yeah, I accept that.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, she's from Boston. I mean, she's from Boston. So the newest thing is this is a number of years ago, this before the whole Alec Baldwin shot that woman. Unfortunately, I don't mean to laugh.
No, it's not funny, but it's just like this happened before he shot that woman because their family is bonkers, and you can say things like that.
And it's crazy. And he still goes on social media, and he still fights for whatever. And he's just like, so he, before this whole thing happened, there was a big kerfluffle because she would go on these shows and she'd have a thick Spanish accent, and then people who grew up with her been like, dude, she's from Boston. What the fuck is she's making it up? And then, like I said, so it was a whole big thing, and everyone's breaking her balls because it's just like, what are you doing? What are you perpetuating? This is perpetuating some strangeness. So this is now January 3rd. Here's the article come up January 3rd. Hilaria Baldwin said she forgot how to say one common word, and skeptics are saying she's lying. The Boston-born wife of Alec Baldwin has faced mockery before for years of pretending she's from Spain. In a new video of Hilaria Baldwin, seeming to forget the English word for onion is getting diced by haters online. The wife of actor Alec Baldwin publicly presented herself as Spanish for years, often speaking with a Spanish accent during these appearances. But in 2020, after a huge online kerfluffle, it was discovered that although she spent a lot of time in Spain and is bilingual, she's actually an American. The New York Times reported that the same year that she was known as Hillary Hayward Thomas until 2009, that she was born and raised in Boston. Yet despite this revelation, Baldwin may be keeping up the act, or at least that's what seems to be happening. A video of Baldwin cooking on a recent post on X, formerly Twitter, by a pop culture account, Pop Crave. It should be noted that it's not entirely clear when the video is filmed. The video post on X was obtained exclusively by the Daily Mail, and the tabloid claims that in the video, Baldwin is cooking for her holiday guests, which implied that this happened recently. No further information was provided. Because in the video, Baldwin can be seen I watched this video. I'm not going to play it for you just because it's like crazy. Baldwin can be seen speaking in a heavy Spanish accent while cooking a dish with tortilla, which is not tortillas. Tortilla is like eggs and potatoes and onions and stuff. And she goes, I learned this from when I was a kid. Don't look it up online because you'll learn something different. Baldwin said to a male friend who was cooking alongside her, she's being, you know, charming and catty and all this stuff. She goes, while continuing to talk about her dish, Baldwin spoke about how she had to alter the recipe a bit for her spouse. And she goes, my husband hates cebollas. And then Baldwin said, while looking to her friend to help her translate the word to English. So she says, my husband doesn't like cebollas. And she's looking at the guest like como se dice, how do you say this? And he goes, onions. And she goes, oh, yes, thanks.
Oh, yes.
Cebollas. Baldwin said, and then keeps continuing to describe how she adapts the dish for her husband. Most people on X are pretty perplexed that Baldwin stills appropriating the elements of Spanish heritage, even though her true identity was revealed. I fucking think it's, you know what? Fuck it. Let's play it. I'm gonna play this because it's fucking crazy. All right, so. That's all I can do. I can't give you any more.
There's just no need for that.
It's crazy because she's really putting it on. She's really putting it on. And it's just, I don't know. There's something about it that I find it to be hilarious.
Don't misunderstand me. I totally get that, like, at some point in your life, you're like, I'm going to go with, like, this is the new me and just push it hard. But, like, once people are like, you know that you were born in raised in Boston, right? Like, her parents have come out and been like, she's not Spanish. Like, her parents are like, yeah, she's never been Spanish, and we didn't even spend that much time in Spain. She's just like a little loopy and really likes Spain. All of that is fine, but like, I feel like she's just committed to it so hard that, like, just for herself, she can't ever back down.
Well,
she's going to Cebolla right into her grave. Like, that's never going to be a thing for her. Where she's no. I am Hilary.
On a personal situation, what I will say is my grandfather came to the United States from Italy. He was actually, both his parents died from the Spanish influenza. And he came over this country not speaking any English, and he was Italian. And he moved with his family in somewhere in New York. And they changed his name from San Giovanni to St. John, and he was Bill St. John. Over time, he learned English, and then he ended up learning Spanish, and he became the right-hand man for this big importer down in South America. So he loved Spanish, speaking Spanish. He learned Spanish in Spain Spanish, mm-hmm. and then he spent most of his life in South America, to the point where his Spanish was so good, people assumed that he was from Spain.
Right.
His Spanish, and he fucking loved speaking Spanish. He never identified as being Spanish, but he loved, to the point where if we go to a restaurant and he could tell that the busboy or the server was Spanish, he just grabbed the fucking busboy before he took the table and just wanted to speak Spanish. You know, like, these busboys would be like, what the fuck? And then he would just have these conversations with these busboys of where they're from and stuff like that in Spanish. But his Spanish was so goddamn good that people thought he was Spanish, but he did never said, I'm from Spain. So I'm from Connecticut.
Yeah, there's like no reason to pretend that you're from that place just because you might be able to seamlessly blend. Like, that's the part that feels weird.
That's the part that feels weird. So his, when he would speak in, he would, and however, there was funny moments where he would speak English, but it would be the Spanish translation of the English. So we would laugh about it, but it made a lot of sense. So like, here was, he accidentally bumped into this woman. We were at a restaurant. I'm very young at this. And he said, oh, pardon me, madam, I didn't mean to molest you. Now, everyone laughed because it sounded fucking horrible. But I guess when, you know, he bumped into her, and I guess the Spanish translation.
Yeah, it's like molestar or something like that, similar in Italian.
So like so the interesting thing was, he used, it wouldn't be the English, correct English word, but it was the correct Spanish word. She's just using fucking, she just wants people to sound, she wants people to think that she's Spanish.
Yep.
I find it to be hilarious.
I think, like,
no pun intended.
I think that the clip about her forgetting the word for cucumber, I think that was the first one that was going around. The thing that doubly made my jaw just drop was not that she was like, oh, I forgot this word. She actually said, how you say.
Yeah,
I was like, no, don't do that. But I mean, I will say, okay, so my oldest brother has lived in Argentina now for like 15 years. Like, that's where he permanently lives. His wife is Argentinian, and like, he spends all of his time in this tiny little town in the mountains where nobody speaks English. And he just moved there. He doesn't speak Spanish, right? Definitely doesn't speak Argentine Spanish, which is like not really written. It's just kind of like dialectual changes. Right. So it's like, it's a full language, but you can't get a book that says like, here's all the words you use, right? So he just goes and just learns it on the fly. My favorite thing about my brother Nate in this context is that although he is fluent in Spanish, he has never changed from having the most American sounding pronunciations of words that you've ever heard in your life. It sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is so funny. Like, he is the complete opposite of Hilary Baldwin. Because Nate is like the most gringo sounding person when he speaks Spanish. But he understands it and he speaks it and they have no problem. You know, it's like he lives there full time. And I will say that when he comes back, he does sometimes forget some words in English, but I will give two caveats to that. One is English is not a language that he speaks very often.
Right.
And two, he did also have a brain tumor at some point and had his brain cut into, which caused aphasia for quite a while. So he just kind of forgets words anyways.
But also, I'm sure that the only words he forgets are not just vegetables.
No, they're not specifically vegetables. They'll be words that you don't use often.
Hilary Baldwin only shoots him for vegetables. Like, it's only the vegetables. Like, the
who
easiest
did
vegetables.
Put that day? Like, come on.
It's the easiest of all fruits and vegetables. Those are the ones that she can't remember. Como se dice apple? It's like, it's madness. That's the worst part. It's like, I think that's the reason why she makes such a fucking clear. Now, here's the final end of it. If I'm Alec Baldwin and I just got all, I inadvertently was involved in the manslaughter of a poor woman who didn't really mean to. So, you know, if you don't know the story, Alec Baldwin on the set of his movie, he's doing some acting with the director. They give him the prop gun, the man at arms, or whoever is the sergeant at arms who's supposed to put blanks in it.
Something like that, yeah.
Or something like that was supposed to be. And then it turns out there was a wad in there. And next thing you know, he's pointing at the director. You shouldn't have done it anyway. And, you know, unfortunately, something happened. And then
there were like 10 things that went wrong in order for this to happen.
And my buddy Nico told me years ago, he's just like, it shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, he's like, I've been on enough film sets that there's a million things that went wrong in that it shouldn't have happened. And so recently he just got, you know, they were going to like there was some evidence that wasn't given to the defense and they were going to retry him. And then now it officially, it's all swept under the table, all gone. He's gone. He's done. If I'm Alec Baldwin, knowing that all these people, and he was referred to for years as the Bloviator because he was such a rabid Democrat in New York, and he would say horrible things about, you know, anybody else, and he was just like very opinionated and give a fuck. If I'm Alec Baldwin and I'm looking to keep a low profile, I'm going to talk to my wife and say, cut it out. That's all I'm going to say. I'm like, Do me a favor. Lay low. Or remember the vegetable names.
We'll write you a list of all the vegetables.
Yeah, stop it. Especially considering it's a story. You know, here's the dumbest part about it. These fucking videos are prepared ahead of time. Mm. So there's a cut, there's a chop, there's a cut list. Somebody's got to get you give them the menu. You see the fucking words. Here's what I need you to give me 5 pounds of onions. Give me the potatoes. Give me the things. None of it was in Spanish, I guarantee you. Mm. So this woman, if she's doing a recipe on a TV show, trust me, she did not forget the word for fucking onions. Well, she did it on purpose. And if I'm Alec Baldwin, I'm going up to her and be like,
honey,
stop fucking playing around. I can't take it anymore.
But you're forgetting also about how, like, not only does she just continually keep having babies, but also within that time frame, like, she had a baby, and then 6 months later, she was like, hey, I had another baby. And people are like, hold up a tick. Like, you gave birth 6 months ago. Now you have a new baby that is fully formed. It percolated the full term, right? And you were also not pregnant in that time. She's like, no, I had this baby. And there was pushback. And then finally she was like, well, I mean, I adopted it. I never said I actually gave birth, right? So like what are you doing? Like, why do you bring more attention?
If I'm Alec Baldwin, I'm just saying, give me a break.
But he did get so mad, which I thought was funny. Did you see his angry rant? I mean, I'm sure we shared it with each other, but where he was like, he goes on Instagram and holds his phone like 2 inches from his face, and he clearly just woke up and has a hangover. And he's like, hey, internet, like, be nice to my wife. She says she's Spanish, so she's Spanish. Like, what the fuck do you care? And I found it like horrifying and also endearing in a way, because here are two people that are just, they're both reprehensible, but they're both such a spectacle. And somehow, in some way, it works with them. And they just keep on having babies and forgetting names of vegetables, and they just keep going.
You know what? The bottom line is, he's from Long Island, and you can never take that away from him. Now, I will do one correction. He is in recovery for many years. He's very proud of his recovery.
It's the hangover. I know I said that. I was like, he's not actually hungover, but it's like the look of someone who has experienced hangover.
He's got eye bags upon eye bags.
Oh, yeah.
My boy looked like he had one. Yeah, 100%. But you can, the best, I think I have a love-hate relationship with him, and the best part is how Long Island he is. Mm. He is super duper north end of Long Island. I know guys like him. Mm. Well, not like him, but families like him, big families and stuff like that. And I'm just like, I love speaking to you about the fact that, and hilariously enough, every year we get some new Alec Baldwin news that has nothing to do with him as being an actor. It's always about him doing something stupid.
Yeah.
And I cannot thank you enough for and I cannot thank Alec Baldwin enough for letting this bit keep going. Once a year, I know.
What is going to happen next year? It's anyone's. It could be anything. Because, we thought it was crazy when we were just talking about him and his wife. And then you're like, hey, you know what we talk about this year? he shot someone.
Oh, he never did. I mean, he's like a sprint. I mean, it's amazing. And anytime there's any weird Baldwin news, I send it to you. And I'm like, we got more.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like unbelievable. So thank you, Jesse Uetta, for once again ringing in 2025, the new year, with positivity.
And then optimism. At the end,
it was, how do you say, Cibola?
How do you say, buon anno?
Come on, how do you say, we got a little shitty at the end. How do you say,
you're using too many words. It's we can chew, how you know say. How you say, onion.
How you say we got a little bit shitty at the end. It's okay. It's all good. Listen, guys, I always have a good time. You know Jessie's around. She's on iJessup on Instagram. She's iJessup. You're still iJessup on YouTube?
Hey now. Just because I only put out one video in the last year, to the point. Oh, my gosh. YouTube sent me an email and they're like, hey, it looks like it's been forever and a day since you posted a video. Just so you know, you're going to lose monetization if you don't post a video.
Oh,
and that's
God.
Why I posted a video, because I was like, oh my gosh, I worked hard for this.
How do you say, como se dice, this is bullshit? Jesus Christ.
Jesus.
Well,
yeah,
guys,
I iJessup everywhere, even if I'm
iJessup
not there.
Everywhere. Nobody better. Ain't nobody better than iJessup. So guys, we will see you next week. Happy New Year. Here's to peace and prosperity. Here's to a happy new year. Here's to, how do you say, como se dice, we're going to get through all this. You know what I'm saying? Don't worry about that.
How you say, we will survive.
We will survive. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Jesse, thanks again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.